plate, you know, to do that, and then I had Betty very nice.
I'll talk to you later.
Good morning, this is the Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means, and we are here today to do a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 2016. So I will open the hearing on 2016. Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, this bill comes from you, I believe, the House Education Committee. I could be wrong on that. This bill creates a new program, a statewide education plan for African-American students or other students who are not covered in an existing culturally specific statewide plan, and also have experienced disproportionate share or result in education due to historic practices. Students in this case are defined as ranging from early learning through post-secondary. Department of Education is taking the lead on this in the bill. They're directed to form an advisory committee to work on a bill, report back to the legislature, and then after that fact, begin the implementation of the plan. I believe Ms. Hunt is here from the department, and whoever she wants to bring forward to describe the bill in more detail and more expertise than I can.
Which bill are we on?
This one.
Okay. And Smith Warren will testify, Mr.
Good morning.
Good morning, co-chairs, Senator Monroe and Representative Comp. My name is...
Welcome all three of you.
Yes.
Thank you.
My name is Cindy Hunt, Government and Legal Affairs Manager for the Department of Education, and it is my pleasure to bring with me today Dr. Markeisha Smith. Markeisha is our Director of Equity at our Department of Education. You've heard Rob talk a little bit when he was presenting about the Network on Quality Teaching and Learning about our equity team. Markeisha is a leader in that team. I brought her with me today because she will be leading the work that's described in this bill, and she'll be able to give you more details. But Mr. Wilson described the bill very accurately, as usual. And so the bill does direct the department to create a plan. The department does have a history of creating plans around culturally specific areas. You've heard about our English Language Learner Plan and, you know, previous testimony, for example. And so a lot of our work around this would be based upon, you know, lessons learned in developing those other plans. It also directs us to report back to you all on a report that would likely be in the 2016 legislative session. And the bill specifically is structured around not putting the grants or what would be done in the report ahead of the work. And so what you'll see in here, and I believe Mr. Wilson will probably describe a little bit more in an amendment to the bill, is that the money for the grants would not be released to us until April of 2016, so that the work doesn't get ahead of the work group work, if that makes sense. So Dr. Smith, take it away.
Yeah, so good morning, everybody, and to co-chairs Comp and Monroe. For the record, my name is Markeisha Smith, and you did an eloquent job of telling everyone what I do. So just a little bit of background, not very much. So data shared in early drafts of the bill, and then what we have is the final draft at this point for House Bill 2016, speak to the clear academic and discipline and graduation gaps that Black and African American students are experiencing statewide when we compare them to students from other racial and ethnic groups. And we see that as, you know, an urgent need to address. So the purpose of House Bill 2016 is to engage in active and meaningful dialogue to create a sustainable action plan to close opportunity gaps for Oregon's Black and African American students. And as Cindy mentioned, we have the English Learner Strategic Plan that has been moving forward, as well as the American Indian Alaska Native student plan. And this plan would be very similar in nature to what those plans are doing as we look at how we're closing gaps for diverse populations of students. And just a little bit about implementation. So as Cindy mentioned, this period of time between now and December, was really about around the planning phases of what will happen. And so having guidance from our advocacy groups will be very critical to the work that's happening here. And we want to make sure that that group is comprised of leaders, community leaders and parents, students, other education stakeholders, particularly those in our Black and African American communities across the state, to really think about what this plan needs to look like and how we decide, you know, on dollars coming into April of 2016. So we will have a progress report that we will submit in December of this year in anticipation of moving forward the work in spring of 2016. And based upon what that advisory group comes up with as the plan, then grant funding and other supports would be distributed as needed. And so that's kind of the long and short of it. This is very important work, particularly for me as director of our equity unit and thinking about how we do close gaps for students of color and English learners, students in poverty across our state. And so this falls right in line with our mission and vision for what that looks like as we serve students in the state. So, thank you.
Are there questions for Dr. Smith or for Cindy? Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Do you have defined outcomes at this point, or are you looking at the OEIB visionary goals, or where's your starting point when you start pulling people together?
So we've used the equity lens in a lot of the work that we do.
Excuse me, can you just give us a definition of equity lens?
So a couple of years ago, I guess now, OEIB worked very hard to create what we know now as, we call the Oregon Equity Lens. But it was a document that was created with a lot of stakeholder input and really was pushing education stakeholders to think about the decisions that we make in curriculum, fiscally, just across the board, as it relates to disparity. So when we think about students of color and English learners and students in poverty, that lens is really one in which helps to guide decision-making practices, and we use it in our agency and in our unit in particular when we're thinking about grant funding and those sorts of things, making sure that we are asking ourselves the tough questions when we are considering students that need to be served. And so we've used that in the work that we're doing as a unit. For this particular bill, I would like to think that would be one of the documents, one of sort of the resources that we use as we begin the work. But really what's important, I think, in this is that we have advocacy group voice and perspective, and that we allow that to organically happen in some ways as they're bringing their expertise and experience as parents and community leaders, as students, to the table to really talk about what a strong plan looks like and how that's executed, and the equity lens being one component of which we can use as a way to look at that work.
Just to follow up.
Go ahead.
And this is really a technical question. I've been a strategic planner for a long time, and as a school principal, I've had lots of training. And so I guess I just a real simple yes or no. Are you going to be using the process would be like a strategic plan where you have your vision, your goals, and your action plans, and then go from there?
Yes.
Thank you. Well, that's what, yes, I just know that those pieces, if you do all those steps, you'll be very successful, and that's what we hope for.
We appreciate that.
Thank okay. You. Any additional questions for the witnesses? Ladies, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else that wanted to be heard on House Bill 2016? Not seeing any, we will close.
Oh, yes.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Huffman.
We have somebody that would like
come
to.
Come on down. Welcome.
Well, good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Joyce Harris, and I am one of those people who has been involved in this work forever. Well, not forever, but most of forever. And I'm glad you raised the question about the OEIB equity lens, because the work that I do I am an employee. I work at Education Northwest. And I'm not here representing Education Northwest. I am actually, I've been involved with helping to try to frame the content of this bill, as well as making sure that what you mentioned, the systemic, strategic approach, is so important. I'm on the community advisory group for ODE, and so I had an opportunity to look at the American Indian Alaska Native work. I served on the Native American mascot work group, and so I have a pretty broad vision of what it means. I actually was the director of the Region 10 Equity Assistance Center for 22 years. And the important thing about this particular work is that it allows us to once again look at equity in its broadest sense. I also was on the advisory committee for the OEIB equity lens. I work with Doris McEwen as that was crafted. And I can tell you, the work that I've done throughout this region, as director of the Equity Center, I served public school districts in Oregon, Washington, Alaska, Idaho, Hawaii, Guam, American Samoa, the Republic of Palau, Republic of the Marshall Islands, the four Federated States of Micronesia. So I've seen equity in a lot of different settings. And Oregon, bar none, has one of the strongest equity lens statements that I have ever seen. And I've seen a lot. The belief statements that are in there, if we adhere to those, and if we make sure that we align the outcomes with the lens of equity, we can be successful. You know, we have a population of students that consistently, and I look at data a lot, consistently are beginning to show up on the bottom of a lot of indicators. And we can't have that. Not if we're going to have a state where everybody is a contributing citizen. And I know that if we have this particular legislation, it will make sure that as we go down the line, we'll be able to say we did all that we could as a state to make sure that all children have an opportunity to be successful, to be contributing citizens, and in the end, Oregon will benefit from that. And that's all I have to say.
Well, you said quite a bit. Yeah. Are there questions for the witness?
No.
Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
And anybody else? Okay, what we're going to do now is close the public hearing and open a work session on 2016, and we have a dash 9 amendment. Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, let me first correct myself. This bill came from the Committee on Rules, not I think it probably started in education, then went to rules, so I misstated earlier.
Okay. House rules.
There is an amendment in front of you. It's the dash 9s, and all this amendment does is take the appropriations section out of the bill and retain the requirements about when money can be spent, to making sure, as Cindy and the Dr. Smith said, to make sure you do the planning before you start implementing the plan and providing the grant. So this amendment takes the appropriation section out, but keeps the timing part of that section in place. The reason it's coming out of this bill is you still have yet to pass the Department of Education budget, which we will hopefully do work session at the end of next week. And for that reason, there's funding for it in the plan. It's a working plan right now, but it would be better if it was in that bill instead of this bill.
Gotcha. Madam Co-Chair.
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair. I move that the dash A9s be amended to House Bill 2016.
Okay. You've heard the motion. Any discussion of the motion? Any objections to the motion? Motion's adopted. Madam Co-Chair.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move House Bill 2016 to the full committee as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Discussion of the motion? Any objections to the motion? 2016 is on its way to full Ways and Means, and I'll be happy to carry it to full Ways and Means and to the Senate. I am the Senate representative to the Commission on Black Affairs. And House?
What about Representative Taylor?
Well, you've worked actually on this a Representative lot, Hack is the chief sponsor of this.
That's fine with me. Yeah, Representative Hack.
Representative Hack will carry it on the House floor. Okay, it's on its way.
Mr. Chair, if I could, so I don't need to come back, talk a little bit about this. I'm sorry.
No, you just, you can't leave us.
Well, I'll leave this in Krista's very good hands for the rest of the meeting, but I did want to talk briefly about the schedule. Tomorrow at 8:30, we'll be hearing Senate Bill 213, which deals with the hubs, House Bill 3380, which deals with mixed delivery preschool initiative that was included in the original governor's budget and is still strongly supported by the current governor, strong enough that she will be here at approximately 8:30 to testify on those two bills. And then those are both public hearings. And then there will be a public hearing and possible work session on House Bill 3335. And then next week, I would expect meetings likely every day next week. On Monday, there are a series of three or four policy bills for public hearing, possible work sessions on a couple of them, I believe. I believe on Tuesday, if things come together right, there will be the work session on HECS budget, Higher Education Coordinating Commission, which includes all of post-secondary, basically, community colleges, public universities. On Wednesday will likely be OEIB's work session, and this is sort of a tentative schedule. And Thursday, if the stars align right, the Department of Education's budget. And that will then conclude at least the budget bills. And also on Tuesday, when you do HECS budget, there are a couple fee bills that you heard yesterday that go along with that budget. So that is the tentative schedule for next week.
So when we do HECS budget, that will include like the community college portion and the university portion?
And also parts of OHSU or all of OHSU.
And OHSU, right. Okay. Questions for Mr. Wilson, Madam Co-Chair.
And Mr. Coach, Ms. Husband, call you Mr. Co-Chair.
Please don't.
Okay. Doug.
I hate door knocking.
You hate door knocking? It's the best. It is the best. After that, we will do bills that have been sent to our committee, or what's after that, after we've spent what I consider probably almost all of our money?
Yes. there will be then, there are a series of bills that you've had public hearing on, many of which may be or will likely be work sessioned as released by the co-chairs.
Okay. And that's all we're going to get out of you.
At this time, that's all I know, too. So.
Any other questions for Mr. Wilson?
It just gets a little hard, Mr. Co-Chair, for committee members to kind of see through the fog and think that there is sunshine in San Francisco. We know there is in Oregon, but how all this works together.
Okay.
Just trying to help out Thanks. Committee members that haven't been here before.
Thanks, Doug.
So what did San Francisco have to do with it?
Okay.
It's the other Bay Area.
Morning.
There's Coos Bay and there's San Francisco. It's the other Bay Area.
The other North Bay Area.
We're in North Bend, Coos Bay.
Senator Roland understands me.
Okay, we're going to open a work session on Senate Bill 473.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 473 was previously heard in this committee on May 28th. The bill will require the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to work with community colleges to determine and report on methods to administer the collection of sexual orientation identification data and allow enrolled students to use preferred first names on certain documents. You have before you on OLIS, LFO recommended A4 amendment, which provides an appropriation to the HEC in the amount of $53,707 general fund for a 0.25 FTE to carry out the provisions of the bill.
Questions for staff? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And as I go through the documents here and trying to put this together in my head, so to facilitate the implementation of this policy, we need 2.5 FTE.
Oh, 0.25. It's a quarter. It calculates out to be a quarter of an FTE over the course of a biennium, so 24 months.
Boy, that makes more sense.
Yes.
And what did you say the fiscal was?
$53,707 general fund.
Thank you.
So that's a quarter FTE for 2 years. Senator Roblin.
Thank you. We heard this in the Senate Education Committee. It was one of those bills that was right on the edge of whether it should come to Ways and Means, and we had made a kind of a determination in our committee anything over 50 comes here. We heard a lot of good testimony from students representing a number of these subgroups explaining why it was important for the universities to know how many and who they were so that they could have a proportionate influence in the conversations that were going on campus. And I was very personally impressed with the students that stepped up and came forward to talk about the issues that they have had at the universities and other places and how they believe this bill and the information could be very helpful. They talked about a few other states that have done the same things and how they had patterned that off to that, especially the preferred name became important to them when in classrooms and others because some of the transgender kids, others would rather be called this particular name, and it means who they are more than the name they were given. But they understood that for the records, there had to be a legal name, and so they just wanted to have an opportunity to have that. I said a lot of university individual professors do that anyway, but some say only address you by your legal name. That has created issues for them at different times, and I think most of the committee came. I think all the committee came to the conclusion that these were some sincere, hardworking students wanting to make an educational choice in their lives and make it easier for them. So, I appreciated the testimony, the bill, and that's why it's here.
Okay, let's go, Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted. I apologize. I was not here on the day that we had the public hearing here. And in reading through the materials, I just wondered if somebody could brief me about the. I saw that it had been amended about community colleges figuring out how to do it versus universities being able to do it immediately. And I wondered if somebody could just speak briefly about where that difference came from, or if I'm reading that wrong.
Go ahead.
Me?
Oh, what?
Well, we've only got three or four experts here.
Okay.
Senator Roblin can correct me, but wasn't it one or two biennia back we had done something for universities, so universities were already kind of in the swing of doing it, but this was going to be fairly new to community colleges?
And it had to do with making sure that their software and other kinds of things could take on this new information. Other stuff had already been done at others. They believe they are there. They all agree they want to do this. It's just making sure that they have the ability to do it.
Okay. Thank
and
you.
And that's where the amendments came from.
Anything further? Representative Springer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also was unable to be here when we had the testimony, so please help me out a little bit. As I think back through forms and recently on some forms, school forms, whether it be K-12 or whatever, universities and community colleges, don't they typically ask what name you go by? I've filled that out on forms, and I'm just wondering why we need a law to do what schools can already do, and I think most are doing.
Senator Roblin?
Thank you. I think that most give that option. Not all. It depends on the software and that kind of stuff. I think almost all K-12 schools now have a place for that.
I think they say
thing.
Nickname.
Yeah, nickname or whatever. But, yeah, very, very similar. That's not true necessarily at the universities and some others where the legal name is going to go on all the documents, and they're a lot more careful about that, apparently. The other part is that I think part of the conversation continues to go, could we just have a blank that lets you enter in how you want to be considered, not necessarily for the name, but for your gender identity, all those other kinds of things, instead of having long lists. And that's part of what the community college stuff was about, making sure that people had an way to identify who they are. And so some schools that do it just have a line that says, how do you choose to identify yourself. Others have checkoff boxes. So I think they're still working on that, and that's part of the whole conversation that's going to go on afterwards. But there are schools that don't allow it, and there are schools that don't. They may allow it, but what happens is it's not on the roster for sent to the class. So the teacher gets a roster, and at the top and on the roster it has all the names. It doesn't necessarily have the preferred names. That's actually a problem at some of the high schools, so that the student goes up to this person and says, my preferred name is this, and many teachers write that down in their book and accept it.
Yep.
Some don't. So we still have that problem also, with some of our other people. Even our chair probably used a different name at school than he did on his legal documents.
I did.
So, I mean, it's really kind of discretionary for teachers sometimes, and this is a way to make sure that on the head of the list of the roster list, it'll have the preferred name instead of the other. And so I think that's part of the whole conversation.
Okay.
Because we do have laws that say you have to have your complete legal name. And so this allows them to do some stuff.
I run into this all the time. Some of you may not know, my actual first name is Wayne. But I never use Wayne. My middle name is Roderick. I never use Roderick.
I might start.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Madam Co-Chair.
I move the -4 amendment to Senate Bill 473.
You've heard the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Representative Springer.
So I'm going to be a no, and I'll tell you why. I appreciate the good senator's response, and it does help. We're passing a law to talk about the forms, and that just kind of always gets me when we talk about the information you can or you now are mandated to ask for, and the name piece, and I guess I don't yet see the issue that we're trying to solve needing or necessitating a law to fix that.
Additional discussion? Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be a yes, but I think it's ironic that this is the form session. We, in one bill, banned the box, and in another bill, we put it on. So, anyway, but I'm going to support it so that everybody can say who they are and what they are.
Additional discussion? The motion is on the A4 amendment. Those who object, you're objecting to the amendment or just the whole bill?
Please remind me of the amendment.
Amendment is the appropriations for the...
Yes, I object to the amendment.
Okay. Let the record show Representative Springer objects. The rest of us are all in support. And the motion carried. And Madam Co-Chair.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 473 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation as amended.
Once again, discussion. Objections. Representative Springer. Motion carried. Carrier to the full, Senator Roblin.
Okay,
fine. And to the Senate and to the House.
Representative Taylor.
Representative Taylor to the House. 473, it's on its way. We will now close work session on 473, open a work session on Senate Bill 475 related to youth care centers.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 475 was also heard on May 28th in the committee. The bill expands educational services provided by juvenile detention education program to include juveniles in youth care centers within detention facilities. There is not an appropriation of funds needed for this bill. It will be using state school funds, but it will cause a shift within the state school fund of roughly $161,782.
Roughly. Okay. Discussion of the motion or questions of staff? Senator Thompson.
What I got out of this is basically there's a facility in Roseburg. So this won't affect like the NORCOR facility where they do education things there too.
Representative Huffman.
Yes, and thank you, Senator Thompson. I did hear back from our juvenile director at NORCOR, Molly, and she said it does affect them. So she appreciated me bringing that up on the record. Mm-hmm. So, now, I don't know how many others there are, but the one in the gorge does.
Senator Thompson.
I think in the bill was portrayed to just help Roseburg. At least that's what I got out of there. Mm-hmm. But I think it's going to affect a lot more every juvenile facility in the state. So the numbers might be not quite correct, but how did you base it? Did you base it on all juvenile facilities or just the one in Roseburg?
Yeah, this one, let me take a look at the fiscal, was written by John Turpening, who's does more of the public safety aspect. And so they were contacting directly some of the juvenile facilities. But I don't know specifically which ones the estimates were based off of, but I can find out.
I just think it's going to be more than that.
Is there somebody in the audience that can speak to this? No? Senator Roblin?
I will tell you that in the testimony you'll see. In the testimony you'll see from the Department of Youth Services from Wasco County, there is a document saying we appreciate this because I think that everybody understands that this will cover any of the appropriate programs. And I know that testimony that was received earlier in the other kind, it wasn't in the Senate committee, it was in Gelser's, indicated that that all of them were talking about it. So I assumed that it was going to cover all of them.
Welcome. Identify yourself and give us some elucidation.
Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, members of the committee, for the record, Jan McComb with the Oregon Department of Education. And with me is Sam Coe. He's the director of the YSEP and JDEP programs at the department. When we did our fiscal impact, we were aware of about 8 students in the Roseburg area that were affected, and that's what we based our fiscal impact on. Sam, do you have any more detail about the conversation that happened this morning here?
Right. There are 11 juvenile detention.
Again, you need to say
your
name.
I'm sorry. Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Representative Comp. There are currently 11 juvenile detention sites around the state of Oregon, and only one site has youth care center beds within that facility, and that's the facility in Roseburg. NORCOR used to have it there, but it's now outside, and it's their tools program, and then in the future they may move it inside their detention. We don't know. That's dependent on the juvenile justice needs. So currently, there's only one site that has a youth care center within the juvenile detention facility, and that's Roseburg. Okay. So that's why it's about, as she said, about $161,000 for the biennial, but we don't know what the future needs will be at other sites.
Okay. Questions of the witnesses? Okay. Representative Huffman.
Mr. Chair, I am being told that you recognize the chairs but still didn't say your name. If you could say your name.
Sorry. My name is Sam Cole from Oregon Department of Education.
Thanks, Sam. Gotta keep things legal, you know. Questions of the witnesses? Senator Roblin.
So what we're talking about are those kids that are in a particular site for a fairly short period of time, who in that time, up to 90 days, I think some are longer, but who aren't getting an education service while they're in the detention center. Most of the kids are getting education services outside of the centers, but if they are inside, we will now, with this bill passing, we will support their education while they're there. Is that correct, or is this, because it doesn't say Roseburg, I just want to make sure.
Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Comp, members of the committee, that's almost correct.
Okay.
The kids in the youth care centers are getting an education,
right.
It's who actually is providing the education. And so right now it is the
Roseburg School District,
and this was shifted over to the YSEP facility.
No, JDEP facility.
The JDEP, that's right. And it does change a little bit of the internal funding mechanism to make it more the same. With the policy thinking is these children are in this facility, let's treat them like the other children in the facility. Right now they're being treated differently.
Okay. So the common school fund money that goes to toward their education goes to whoever is actually providing the education at that particular time.
That's correct.
Okay. Additional questions for the witnesses? Thank you very much for coming up and helping us. We appreciate it. Is there additional discussion on this issue before we take a motion? Okay, Madam Co-Chair on 475.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move Senate Bill 475 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Any additional discussion on the motion? Any objections to the motion? Motion carries. And we need to assign carriers.
Representative Taylor for the House.
I'm feeling very supportive today.
Okay, Representative Taylor to the House. Who wants to carry it to full Ways and Means? Senator Roblin to full Ways and Means.
I was going to say Senator Thompson ought to at least carry one or two education bills.
If I don't get sick, I could do it.
Either way, fine for now.
Yeah,
why don't we let Senator Thompson carry it to the Senate, okay, and we'll let Senator Roblin carry it to full Ways and Means?
That way we don't fight.
Right. That's right. Good.
Well, and it covers you for Friday.
Divide the effort along
perfect
here.
Perfect.
Okay.
And I will try to ride a pony that includes some of the information that we just discussed in here, and that'll make
helpful
it a little clearer.
Yeah.
Anything else to come before this committee today? Okay, now tomorrow at 8:30, the governor's going to be here, so we don't want her to have to sit and wait for committee members to show up.
Yeah, you and I were here like
I know,
on the spot.
I know.
I beat both of you.
Oh, well, your books did.
Close the work session on 475. This meeting is adjourned.
Are you running Monday's meeting?
Those are the two lobbyists that I've...
We are going to...
Those are the two lobbyists that I've...
We are going to...